I'm Kate Mallison. I'm Professor of Law in the Department of Law. I have a particular interest in the judiciary and the legal profession. I do work on judicial independence and specifically on the way that judges are appointed. And I have a particular additional interest in equality and diversity issues in the legal profession and the judiciary. If we look back to 1911, 100 years ago, the position for women was clearly radically different. Women were not allowed to practice as solicitors or barristers. Very few women qualified with a law degree. Clearly, we're in a really different situation now. The majority of law graduates are now women. Women are more likely to obtain a first-class degree than men. More women than men go into the legal profession. There are now more new entry solicitors and barristers, and that's been the case for a number of years now. And of course, this is radically changing the profile of the legal profession. There are now nearly 50% of solicitors are women overall, at all ages and at all stages, and about 35% of barristers are women. So you could say that there has been really a revolution in the profile of the legal profession and in the position of women in the legal profession. The problem at the moment is not entry. The problem is women progressing up through the legal profession. And of course, we have a judiciary that is recruited directly from the legal profession, from the higher ranks of the legal profession. And therefore, the fact that women are not progressing up and being promoted up through the legal profession has a very dramatic and knock-on effect on the judiciary. What we see, for example, is that over the last 10 years or so, the number of women who are being appointed as Queen's Counsel, that's the top rank of barristers, has remained pretty well static. There's been a slight increase, but very little, hovering at around 12%. Likewise, the number of women who are being promoted to the position of partner in solicitors' firms is less than 20%. And that's particularly true, the figure is even worse for big, powerful city law firms. So what we see is that women are coming in very great numbers at the bottom, but they are not progressing up to the top. And that means, likewise, their numbers in the judiciary are still very low, less than 20%, and in the upper ranks of the judiciary, they are almost invisible still. In the Court of Appeal, there are 3 women out of 37 judges. In the Supreme Court, there are 12 judges and only 1 woman, Brenda Hale. So I think what we're seeing is that far from trickling up, which was the expectation when I came into this area of work in the 1980s and 1990s, the assumption was that women would simply naturally and automatically trickle up, that as their numbers moved through, they would find their positions in the top ranks of the legal profession and in the judiciary. Instead, what we see is that they are actually trickling out rather than trickling up. And these problems actually start, these barriers to women start very early, surprisingly early, so that we see that within 2 or 3 years of post-qualification, the pay gap between men and women in the legal profession has already started to open up. By their late 20s, women are already receiving lower salaries than their male counterparts. And remember, this is a cohort of women that are on average better qualified than their male counterparts. These are often highly talented, highly able women. By the time they reach their 30s and women start to have families, we find that the trickle becomes a flood. And large numbers of extremely able women leave the legal profession, or they leave private practice and they go and work as employed lawyers in local authorities or in the Crown Prosecution or somewhere equivalent. And what we see is that the legal profession really hasn't changed to the extent that one would have expected it to take account of and accommodate the needs of women. The expectation is still that women will be primary carers, whether for children or for parents, and that that really is their responsibility, and it's their responsibility to fit those caring responsibilities around the needs of their work, not the other way around. What we see is that working practices in the legal profession really have hardly changed at all. They are still based around a long hours culture. They're still based around a culture in which you are not expected to have flexible needs outside the working environment. And while women still carry the bulk of caring responsibilities, it's almost inevitable that they're going to find it increasingly difficult to continue to work in the way that they are required to work in the legal profession and to maintain those caring responsibilities. The culture of the legal profession is still very male. We've actually had some very interesting recent research carried out by colleagues at the University of Westminster and Leicester, which interviewed a lot of lawyers about their experiences, and judges indeed. And what that demonstrated was that there is still a very macho culture, that it is still an extremely traditional profession, and that really hasn't changed in the way that one would have expected. And of course, a lot of these experiences are not unique to the legal profession. The legal profession may be a particularly conservative and traditional one, but we see them replicated in professions right across the board: accountancy, medicine, politics, indeed any profession or institution of power. We're seeing the same sorts of patterns replicated, which is large numbers of highly able, talented women coming in at the bottom and then gradually finding it more and more difficult to permeate, to break the glass ceiling, to actually make their way to the top of the profession. Unless there is real political commitment about it, I don't see that changing any time in the near future. So while we see a picture that I think in some ways is pretty depressing, I suppose the optimistic note is that there are some absolutely fantastic role models. In terms of the judiciary, of course, Brenda Hale, the one woman in the Supreme Court, who in a sense ticks all the diversity boxes, because she's also the only woman, the only member of the Supreme Court not to have gone to a fee-paying school. She was originally an academic. She's had a different career trajectory to most of the judges, all of whom tend to have quite homogeneous backgrounds, both in terms of their social background and their career patterns. And she, as well as being a fierce intellect and a powerful brain on the court, also has spoken out again and again for the need for greater gender equality in the legal profession and in the judiciary. One of the interesting aspects of my work and studying what's been happening in the UK has been to look at what's going on in other countries and to say, well, is it simply a global phenomenon? Are we looking at patterns that are replicated everywhere, or is there something different happening here? And there are some countries in which progress has been much faster and in which women have done much better in the legal profession and the judiciary. A good example, I think, is Canada, where particularly in relation to judges, there's been very proactive efforts, very conscious political engagement with the problem of lack of gender diversity. And as a result, there are many more incredibly able and talented women in the judiciary. If we look, for example, at their Supreme Court, 4 of the 9 justices are women, including the Chief Justice. And this clearly makes for a very different composition of court, a very different style of court, and much more legitimacy. This is a court, and there are others. The South African Constitutional Court is another example. The Israeli Supreme Court. These are courts which really can hold their head up, I think, and claim that they, though they are not democratically accountable in the way that politicians are, and they never could be as judges, they can claim legitimacy through the greater diversity in the composition of their bench. And I think that's something that the UK Supreme Court, and indeed the Court of Appeal and the High Court here, needs to look at and needs to think about very carefully.